problematic.
How to distinguish? Well, sahaja mentality means materialism. It means that the bhav, the enthusiasm, is coming out of the body and sense gratification and conceptions that, as all the conceptions we read there, that I am Krishna and that this body is perfect. And spiritual life means sense gratification. Like that.
Mm-hmm. We can, after that description, we can already, Evan has been in your fidelity, we can understand the mood of this great Acharya, when they must have been very furious, like lion, when they get in, when they have connection and see these people and things on their own.
Yes.
So we can understand more vital cries and them shooting the boots or,
And then they're saying, see, anger. You see, once you accept materialism as being all in all, then that's another principle of these sahajas, this false humility. You see, they don't mind, as we mentioned, they don't mind to be called the greatest sinner of sinners, because the great Vaishnavas are also saying like this. So then if, you know, once you're on that platform, then what's the use of criticizing anyone for whatever they're doing? You see, then just relax. Go with the flow. Life is wonderful. Everybody's all right. You see? And even the great Vaishnavas are harshly criticizing, you dog, you jackal, like this. They say, it's anger. So he's also feeling material desires. Everybody is feeling material desires. Yes. The thing is that this sahajya is it's a general term. Underneath that, aul, saki, beki, chudadar, goranga, nangri, and also bowels, which could be put underneath, but I just put them on that side. Those are more specific groups, but they all can be called sahajyas. These sahajyas, as we said, it's clearly said here, since the beginning of the world there have been. It actually just means materialism, finally. The whole material idea. And when it comes into the realm of Vaishnavism, then it's noted as this Prakriti Sahaja Appa Sampradaya.
Cleansing himself as a follower of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how can they derive their behavior on...
So they play the flute, and then the Saki Bekis come. So this is Chudadhari. That's all the information I have about them. And then Goranga Nagari. So we've established all these different forms of perverted imitation of Krishna's pastimes. Now, Goranga Nagari, they transpose that all that nonsense idea to Lord Chaitanya and Vishnu Priya. They make a whole cult of Lord Chaitanya being the enjoyer, being Krishna, Lampat. Lampat, you find that word in the Shikshashtakam also. Lampat means debauchee. So Krishna, in his relationships of loving exchange with his devotees, he's taking that mood of debauchee. Yeah? It's transcendental. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't come as Lampat. He came as the devotee of the Lord to preach Krishna consciousness. But they have imposed this upon Lord Chaitanya. So they worship Lord Chaitanya with a flute. Gauranga, gold, holding the flute like Krishna, and standing next to him, they'll have Vishnu Priya Devi as Radharani. So they're called Gauranga Nagari. And this is Rasa Basa. Because Lord Chaitanya didn't come as the Gauranga Nagari. Nagari means one who's going out in the village to enjoy relationships with other ladies. But all the scriptural accounts of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they verify that Lord Chaitanya was, in this regard, most strict throughout his whole life. They concentrate in their so-called worship of Lord Chaitanya in his householder ashram. But even as a householder, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Bhagavat declares, he never looked at other women than his wife, he never joked, he never smiled with them, nothing like that. So it's a complete misrepresentation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's whole mood. So it is Rasa Basa. And this group is still very prominent.
How they look like?
No, they just look like Bengali Vaishnavas. Nothing special about them. But it's the mood that you'll see. In yesterday I mentioned this interesting person initiated by Srila Prabhupada, who's just waiting to, if you go visit him, to tell you what your rasa with Krishna is. So, if you want. Huh? No. I mentioned him yesterday. He's living in Mayapur. Not in the ISKCON temple, but... Oh, okay. No. But this is a Srila Prabhupada disciple who's lived for years now in Mayapur Dham. He's established his own temple. He has a Bengali wife, children. He's totally immersed in all of this. he's an expert. Practicing it himself. And yes, he's very eager to... Anyone here wants to know their eternal lila? He will tell you at least what he thinks it is. And give you mantra and teach you how to get into that bhav, that meditation. So I talked with him shortly and I saw he worships Gaura Gadadhar. Now, worship of Gaura Gadadhar is actually bona fide. Bhaktivinod Thakur worshipped God, they call Gadai Gauranga. So instead of Lord Chaitanya and Vishnu Priya, what is bona fide is to worship Lord Chaitanya and Gadadhar Prabhu. Because Lord Chaitanya as Krishna, Gadadhar as Radharani, as friends in Navadvip, when Lord Chaitanya would go with Gadadhar here and there, and they would sometimes actually enter into that ecstasy again. They would sometimes Lord Chaitanya would declare, "Gadadhar is my eternal consort," like this, and they would sing songs glorifying Radha Krishna Leela together like this and share this ecstasy. This was all part of the mercy that Lord Chaitanya was showing to the associates, the Vaishnavas. There was once a big play, performance, dance, which is described in Chaitanya Bhagavat, in which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Gadadhar they danced on stage in this mood, and it was very much appreciated by the devotees. So that's actually authorized. Bhaktivinoda Thakur worshipped Gadai Gauranga. So this person, he's also worshipping Gadai Gauranga. But for 6 months, the deities looked like Gadai Gauranga. And then after Janmashtami, from Gorpanima to Janmashtami, he dresses them like Gadai Gauranga. Then from Janmashtami to the next Gorpanima, like Radha Krishna. So, and then he's also he's keeping pictures of Vishnu Priya Devi and all this. So he's very much influenced by this Gauranga Nagari mood, it seems, and other things. Other things are there too. So this is a kind of, you know, very sentimental and very unauthorized type of mood of worshipping Lord Chaitanya. To take him as the enjoyer. And they worship him with Vishnu Priya Devi, like this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they will say like that. Yeah. They project Lord Chaitanya that he had the same mood as Krishna. This is the point, this lumpat mood, when he didn't. And they have songs that they've written that describe this mood. The songs are written from the point of view of, you know, some woman's point of view, and she saw Lord Chaitanya, and, you know, so on and so forth. But this is not, this is Rasa Basa, this is not Mahaprabhu's mood. Anything else on that line from Sahaja to Gauranga Nagari, because we will go to the next one. Yeah? No, they all do that. That's all, this comes with the initiation into any one of these Appa Sampradayas. You see, just like when you get initiated in ISKCON, you get the spiritual name and you get you make the vow to chant 16 rounds. So in these Appa Sampradayas, with your initiation, you're told that you are such and such gopi, or you are a peacock, or you are a cow, or something like that, in Golok. And then you spend the rest, your sadhana becomes meditating in some way or other, according to, you know, the so-called process in any one of these sampradayas, upper sampradayas, then you meditate on that identity in some particular way and try to enter that ecstasy. One other Western person who had been initiated by Srila Prabhupada, he also left ISKCON and went to one of these Goswamis and was told he was a peacock. Now, there was also another one who was told the same thing years before. It seems what happens is that because you're a Westerner, you see, that's like low class. So the Westerners are never told that they're like gopis, or, you know, they're always like peacocks, or, you know, the shantaras, because they're Westerners. So this is one thing. You're just not very advanced because you're born in that body. So anyway, then he was told he was a peacock. So then he was seen once by some ISKCON devotees who was standing out in a field somewhere in Mayapur. And he was acting, he was walking like a peacock around, trying to get into the bhava, you know, get into the mood. and making this call, you know, the peacocks make this sound. So he was doing that. All right, now we're going to go over to the other column, the bowels. According to bowel philosophy, Lord Krishna and Srimati Radharani, they live inside the gross material body. So it is unnecessary to search them out somewhere else, outside. One simply has to find them in the gross body. This cult also accepts that Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwara, Goloka, Vaikuntha, Vrindavan, all of everything, the whole spiritual manifestation, dwells within this physical body. They have a Bengali saying, these bowels, that which is not present in the human body cannot be found anywhere else. Now, there's a note here about their practice. These bowels, they mix. There's a word, syncretism. Syncretism means when someone mixes the characteristics of different religions together to form his own religion. So the bowels do this. They're syncretists. They will have some of the, like maybe Kantimala, some of the aspects of a Vaishnava, but then at the same time they may wear Rudraksha, these big beads of the Shaivites, or they may wear crystal garland. There's a kind of garland that the Muslims use. So they'll wear this. And they may dress up like fakirs, Muslim ascetics, keep beard, and have. Actually, that's a classical outfit of the bowels. They have a beard, a big bun of hair, you know, the hair tied up in a bun. They have a bag over their shoulder. They have a stick, and they have what is called a fishti, a pot made from a coconut shell. And you still see them. I've seen them come to Mayapur. Now I'm visiting on Gaur Purnima. So those are the bowels. If you see them, you know. And the characteristic of the bowels, and actually all these others, is that, you know, there's two kinds of bhakti, Vaidhi bhakti and Raganuga bhakti. The bowels never practice any Vaidhi bhakti. That's out of the question. They start with Raganuga. What means bowel? Right. I should come to that. The word bowel is a perversion of the word batul. So it's very similar actually to aula. Batul, aul means afflicted, or atul. Atul means afflicted, and batul means crazy. So one is afflicted by lust, and the other is crazy from lust. And this word bowel is also, it's also found in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And sometimes it is used in Chaitanya Charitamrita to refer to someone who is in transcendental ecstasy. So they have taken that. Now, there's one thing about the bowels philosophically. They of course, are in many ways, as I said, similar to the aulas in that, or the, you know, sahajyas. They're actually a kind of sahajya. So the illicit relationships and all of that is there. But the bowels are especially noted to be philosophically a combination of three things. That in the in the bowels there is, of course, the superficial Vaishnavism stemming from Lord Chaitanya. There is also the Mayavadi idea coming from Shankaracharya, some impersonal Mayavadi philosophy is there. And there is also the tantric, left-hand tantric, black magical practices. And the tantric ritualism on this the side which is called Vama Marga, left-hand tantric, it is actually very obnoxious. These are the things which we cannot really talk about in this. They have, you know, actual rituals, practices, what they say is religious worship, which consists of very nasty things. So the bowels, they take this up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the real purpose is just sense gratification. But they have some... You see, the tantrics are... They're... Those who are tantrics, known as tantrics, they worship Shiva, Lord Shiva, and Devi, Goddess Durga. And they're in the mode of ignorance. So they accept Shiva and Durga as God. And so... in that ignorant mode of worship, they do terrible, ignorant, crazy things because they think this is how you worship Lord Shiva and Goddess Durga. So then from this they try to get powers, you know, they try to attain mystic perfections. There's a whole body of scriptures about this, describing these things. Yeah. It means the ecstasy, all this transcendental ecstasy is here in this body. So one just has to know how to extract it. Just like the tantrics, those who are tantrics, they're trying to extract all kinds of mystic perfection out of this body by engaging this body in all kinds of strange activities. So they take the same idea, but say you can extract the prema from this body in the same way. Just as an example, they will, you know, eat the flesh of a dead human body, dig up some body from a Muslim graveyard, and eat it, decomposed human body. The idea that if you do this, then you overcome your attachment to this material world because there's nothing more disgusting you can do than eat a rotting human body. And then by transcending attachment, then you come to the higher platform of realization. After you've transcended the material world, then you come to consciousness of Krishna. That's how they think. Now the tantrics actually, you know, they're not Vaishnavas. The Baals have taken this from the tantrics and just, you know, adapted it to Vaishnavism. The tantrics will do things like that to achieve some kind of mystic power or something, some kind of perfection. And there's a lot of other things. I just gave that as an example, eating it. Rotting human body, but there's a lot of other things they do that just make you vomit if I told you so.
It seems like they accept Radha and Krishna to be not persons, but to be like in a space of consciousness.
Yeah, I mean, it's something you realize. It's a state you realize. Yeah, impersonalism and person. I mean, Radha and Krishna, maybe it's like you become Krishna yourself, like the Allahs and Chudadharis thing. You know, it's like, who knows, can be anything. Any... Well, the Raganuga simply means the mood, you see, it just pertains to the mood. They just want to develop this ecstatic mood, become mad. You know, that's their whole point. You become mad. If you become crazy, then you're on the highest platform. So to become, literally what it means, they'll dig a dead body up out of the ground and eat the flesh to make themselves, you know, obviously only a crazy person does this. So they want to become crazy. And then they take that craziness to be, because Lord Chaitanya, he exhibited this divyonmada, it's called divine madness. So then they think by doing things like this, they can also become, because again, this principle is everything is one, that's there. So if you become nuts, you know, then you're the same as Lord Chaitanya. So that means, you know, in the psychiatric institution, they're keeping the most advanced devotees in the world by this Baal philosophy. The great acharyas, the modern day Goswamis are all in the nut house. If we were to accept this point of view.
Yeah. Seems like the all this kind of mentality you find here in the West, all kind of psychology theories and all kinds of popular opinions.
Mm. And you also see this clearly, you know, when in our preaching, you just see these, you actually see these people coming to the temple, you know, visiting as guests sometimes. You know, people who are crazy, and they actually think that Krishna consciousness, you know, that they understand Krishna consciousness, you know, they really know what it is. They're completely mad, and they come in and they're, you know, acting really strange and you know, talking with the devotees really strange, and you know, and they're having so many realizations. And of course the devotees are thinking, this guy is just crazy, you know, throw him out. But that's an example. I mean, we could speculate that such persons may have even been in the last life, some Baal or owl or something. And then, because there was some contact with Krishna consciousness, he got the fortune to take in human birth again, but in some, you know, Malecha Desh. And then again have some contact with the Krishna consciousness movement. Because they exhibit these same complete misunderstandings. And sometimes they even can fake it long enough to get into live in the temple and get initiated, and then later on it all suddenly comes out. Actually, this is another point. We wonder, how is it? Someone joins the Krishna consciousness movement, we thought he was a nice devotee, and then suddenly he's a complete madman or complete sahaja. So, and the standard answer is, it's because of offenses, some previous offenses in the past life. There they are. These are the offenses. One is connected with such groups and one makes very bad offenses, and even though he may get saved by this Krishna consciousness movement, still it's very difficult to overcome the reactions of these things. So then, moving on, Kartabhaja. Kartabhaja was started in the 17th century by a person named Aul Chand. Again, that same word, Aul, was there, but it was used in a different way. Because Aul also has the meaning of important person. So in that sense, he was called Aul. very important person, Aul Chand. Chand means moon. So he lived in a village called Ula of Nadia district. And his family origins and everything is well known. Aul Chand is a very prominent person in history in Bengal. So this Aul Chand was a great mystic. Just like nowadays in India, there's a very famous mystic, Sai Baba. He has hundreds and thousands of followers and very, very famous. So in the 17th century, a person like that appeared in Bengal. That is this Aul Chand. He had mystic powers. He could do many things. And so by this mystic powers, he attracted so many followers. And he said he was Mahaprabhu, come again. So then the followers worshipped him. They accepted him as guru and they worshipped him as Mahaprabhu. And so from this is the origin of that name, Karta Bhaja. Karta means boss. Bhaja means to worship. So the idea here is that the guru is the boss or the karta. Whatever he does or says is always right. So you need not look into any scripture. You need not look into what any previous acharya said or did. You need not look on the side for any sadhu to confirm. You just accept the karta blindly. Everything he says, everything he does is transcendental. Now, as I said, this Aul Chand, being a mystic, so he was strict. And the line coming down was also strict. They didn't do any of these illicit practices. They were like yogis. And they apparently, they're being strict to keep up their mystic powers. But philosophically, of course, they're completely off. The followers of this sect say, Kali, Krishna, God, Koda. That's the name of Allah. So Kali, Krishna, Bhagavan, Koda. The name does not matter. Hesitation exists only in the conflict of beliefs. Do not be disturbed by these conflicts. O mind, speak the names of Kali, Krishna, Bhagavan, and Koda. So they just, you know, anything and everything. Worship. Now, related to this is this so-called Paramahansa Ramakrishna, who appeared, I shouldn't say appeared, but anyway. Yeah, he appeared from somewhere. in the last century in Bengal. And he taught this same philosophy. In fact, he even established a new kind of deity. There's a deity standing. One half down the middle is Krishna. The other half is goddess Kali. So, Kali, he wanted to establish that Kali, goddess Kali and Krishna are the same. So you can worship one or worship the other. But he liked Kali himself personally. And so his followers, they also have that tendency. Krishna's all right, but actually, it's Kali. So he was also some kind of mystic and so on and so forth. And he got promoted by one society, Brahmo Samaj. They were looking for an avatar. They had established a society, one Ram Mohan Roy. And it was a society for some... They were looking for some new form of Hinduism which was relevant to the modern time. And so they decided, we need an avatar, just like the Christians. They have their Christ. And everyone believes in Christ and gets power from that. And these Vaishnavas, they have Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and so on and so forth. The Islamic religion, they have their Muhammad. So we need our avatar. So then they looked around and they found this person, Gadadhar Chatterjee, his name was. And he was some kind of mystic and whatever. So they made him, called him Ramakrishna. And he taught like the same kind of thing. Kali, Krishna, doesn't matter. In fact, it said that this Ramakrishna, he practiced for a time all the religions. For some time he was a Vaishnava. And you know, while being a Vaishnava, he very quickly went up to the highest stage of realizing Radha and Krishna. And then he left that, and then he became a Muslim. And then he very quickly realized Allah. And then after that he became a Kali worshipper, and he very quickly realized God is Kali. So he practiced all the religions and realized the supreme truth to be that's taught in each one. And then he came out and said, I have seen the truth behind all religions, and it's all one. So no matter if you're a Vaishnava or a Kali worshipper or a Muslim or a Christian, he was also practiced Christianity, it all comes to the same goal. So let us give up the sectarian fighting. And worship me. Somehow after doing all that, he became God. So that Ramakrishna, that's, it's not that he's actually part of Kartabhaja Sampradaya, Upper Sampradaya, but it's very similar, just to give an example. And these Kartabhajas, they're still around. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, even before, when he was still a young man, it's described in his biography, he even got some cure. He was very sick. So he went to one doctor, mystic, who was a Kartabhaja, who gave him some cure that worked. So, yeah, another thing about, last thing to note, the Kartabhajas have a vast body of songs and scriptures which they've written themselves. Because the Guru, that's a tradition. Aulchand, he's God. Then the next Guru, he's God. So every Guru is God. So whatever he says, that's scripture. So therefore they have so many scriptures, so many Guru Gitas. And these scriptures are all in very also esoteric, mysterious language. It's very difficult to understand what they mean. One has to, it's like a secret society too. This aspect is there. One has to be initiated into it and learn the secret meaning of these words. And then one gets some understanding from it. Something like today, you have these Freemasons and like that. Secret group. Okay, then we move on to the Neda. Or they're also sometimes called Neda Nedi. So Neda means shaved head. It refers to Buddhists at the time of Mahaprabhu's movement in Bengal. There were also Buddhists and Nedas with shaved heads. And the Nedi means Buddhinis, the lady Buddhists. They also had shaved head. So, for instance, Sri Virabhadra Goswami, he, in Dhaka, which is now the capital of Bangladesh, he preached and converted some, more than 1,000 of these Nedas and Nedis. And they, apparently from what I've read, they were quite a wild bunch. You know, they had their shaved heads, they kept their heads shaved. And they were quite wild, and they used to... They were enthusiastic. They were enthusiastic followers of Virabhadra Goswami, and they liked to have kirtan. And but they would make big trouble for those who resisted Krishna consciousness, those who opposed Krishna consciousness. They were quite like heavy. So they would come in their big group, some 1,500 of them, and if someone was criticizing the Vaishnavas, then they would give him heavy trouble. So then anyway, there were others, Nedas, Buddhists. And the point is that they kept their attachment to Buddhism. So this philosophical kind of contamination is there. And they see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as an incarnation of Buddha. And then their understanding of the, you know, the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy is all kind of in that light, Buddhist light. So this is another example of syncretism. This may not be so, you know, so relevant, this form. We don't see any Nedas now. Actually, you don't see that they've disappeared. They're not there in Bengal anymore either. But what we do see in the Western countries, especially, well, all over, is the tendency of people to merge religions together and think that they can maintain a foot in one other religion and the other foot in Krishna consciousness. So this is another example of syncretism. As are the Dharavesh. Dharavesh, or they say Dervish. Dervish is a Muslim wandering mystic. They're in Persia, even now. So it's actually a Muslim thing, kind of like a Muslim sadhu. But in Bengal, after Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement began to spread, then these Muslim fakirs or dervishes, they were also taking up the Harinam Kirtan and some practices of the Vaishnavas. So, but they never accept worship of deities like the Muslims. But they will chant Hare Krishna, they will also chant Allah, Allah Akbar, Allah is great. Now, they will claim authority of Srila Sanatan Goswami. Because Sanatan Goswami says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 20, text 13, Darbesha hayan ami Mekka ke yayira. I will go to Mecca as a Muslim mendicant. Do you remember when he said that?
When he was in jail.
When he was in jail, he told his jailer. So, now this is a good illustration of how these upasampradayas start. So Sanatan Goswami, to get out of jail, he said that. I will become a Dharavesh. And so now, this whole sect comes out of that. Yes, Sanatan Goswami, he became a Dharavesh. This is the real thing. This is the real understanding. So they dress up like Muslims and don't worship the deity. And of course, you see, Neda, Dharavesh, and also the shine that just means any kind of bogus sannyasi. Shine is derived from Goshani or Goswami. Different from Jati Gosai, which means born in a family of Goswami. Shine means they just make themselves, you know, or initiate each other as wandering mendicants, sannyasis. So they also shine very similar. They mix the customs of the Hindus and the Muslims, and they will also say this Guru Nanak, who founded the Sikhs, he was also a shine or something like, you know, they take anything from anywhere and throw it all in one pot. And also Mahaprabhu's some teachings are there, or chanting of Hare Krishna may be there. So there's no real organization. And so therefore, naturally, the practices, what they do, it can be anything. You know, they they'll eat anything, you know, smoke, tobacco or hashish, doesn't matter. You'll just find all different variety. It just becomes, you know, concoction from one individual to another, engaging in different degraded habits. Then finally, last one is Atiwadi. The Atiwadi sect started in Mahaprabhu's time in Orissa. Sri Jagannath Das is the founder of this community. Now, Atiwadi means in Bengali, too great. For instance, when Jagannath Das, he was actually originally a follower of Haridas Thakur, but then he learned something from Haridas Thakur, but then broke away. He went before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates and declared, "Lord Chaitanya, you are Krishna and I am Radharani." And Lord Chaitanya said, "Oh, you are Atiwadi, you are too great. You are too great to be here with us. You should go on your own." That way Lord Chaitanya got rid of him. So because Mahaprabhu said this, they took that as their name. It's just like, you know, the Hindus, you know, this name Hindu. The Muslims came over and said, "You are Hindus," you know, to the followers of Varnashram Dharma. So the name was meant as an insult. Hindu in Persian language means thief. But, you know, but these people took it. Yes, we are Hindus. So that was one thing. Then another thing, another sense of this Atiwadi is that they consider themselves, Jagannath Das and his followers, more learned in the scriptures, better judges and better logicians than Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Nityananda, Thakur Haridas, and so on, all the great associates. So in that way, they think themselves too great. Another sense of it is that Jagannath Das has translated Srimad Bhagavatam into the Orient language, and he also added 5 more chapters. So their Bhagavatam is also a little too great, a little too big, a little too Atiwadi, too much. And Jagannath Das used to sing sweetly. Ladies were attracted to his voice, so he got many lady followers. And he used to have them give him massage. And for this, he was once arrested and brought before the king. I imagine this was Maharaj Prataparudra, because he was living at the time of Mahaprabhu. So he was brought before the king, and the king said, "What are you doing? You're supposed to be a sadhu, and you have women massage your body." And he said, "I'm on the transcendental platform. I don't see any difference between man and woman." So the king was not very impressed and threw him in jail. Yes. Oh, yes, and that yogi that Bhaktivinoda Thakur arrested was a member of this group, that Bhishikeshan. He was a Atiwadi, yeah. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, after arresting him and having the trial, he published a letter to some newspaper denouncing the Atiwadi sect. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur also mentioned, as a result of Vishikeshana, he said they're very much engaged in politics also. So it was another feature, at least at that time, that they became this kind of revolutionary sadhu. Now we see in India today, same thing going on. There's a revival of Hinduism. The Hindus are making a party, and they want to push down the Muslims and the Christians and everyone else and become, you know, this. India is a Hindu country. So there are sadhus now going around preaching this. And one of their leaders, one Swami Chinmayananda, he recently declared that the sadhus should drop their dandas and their water pots and take up politics. So this is compares to this. So they were putting on a big festival for 1-2 days. They had loudspeakers set up at the ashram, and they were having these kirtan bands, sahajya kirtan bands, and playing music, and then the singer on the microphone is singing songs, sahajya songs, explaining Krishna Leela. And I can't forget one in particular. It was one woman singer. I couldn't tell it was a woman. I thought it was a boy, you know, because just a high voice. But it was such a, you know, I just heard this speaking something, singing something, then crying, you know, like crying on the microphones, crying out, screaming. And I was wondering, what's going on? I have to see this. What's going on there? So it wasn't far from the Gurukul, so I walked over. I it was so loud, I had to see what it was. And when I got there was this woman. She was standing, the band was sitting around her, and she was standing with the microphone. And it was just a big show she was doing. She was just singing, some making gestures at the audience, and then crying. Her hair was loose, and then she would cry out, Krishna, Krishna. And all the people are sitting around. You see, hundreds of people from the villages, they're coming and sitting. It's music, it's some show. And in this way, they learn about Krishna. So you can just understand what ideas they go away with when they see something like this. I couldn't understand the language, but just by seeing, it was very clear. Yes? Well, if you take that in the general term of materialism, yeah. But these 13 sampradayas, they, not all of them, some came later, but the oldest ones started at the time of Mahaprabhu. In other words, there were so many materialists, hardcore materialists, so when Mahaprabhu's movement started, then they were influenced, some of them. So they seemed to take up Krishna consciousness, but not really. And that's why we have these sahajas. In other words, they maintained the materialism, but they started dressing up like Vaishnavas and imitating Vaishnavas, maintaining all their lusty material desires. So that is a phenomena that started with Mahaprabhu and his movement. But if you take sahajya just to mean materialism, then it's always there. In any different kind of form. Anything else on this? Yeah. Oops. It's okay. I thought it was Prema Ras.
But just for a little joke.
Oh.
You know, apa in Swedish means monkey.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. Yes, Maharaji.
You mentioned that the sahaja they speak about the three stages of perpetual bondage, the one that should be Sinha, and perpetual Sinha they have. And it's also when we like those who are on these lower stages, do they follow some principles as the resultants which are looking to first only from those who supposedly attain Sinha they have?
Well, what principle they will follow will be according to who they're, you know, which particular teacher, so-called spiritual master they've accepted. And all their, you know, these principles will change from one teacher to the next, you see. There's nothing really standardized at all. So the sadhaka deha, the body of the sadhaka, the one following sadhan, but that sadhan can be anything, you know. That just reminds me, I once met a person. It was a Western person, but this sahaja mentality is everywhere. So just to illustrate, I was once on Sankirtan many years ago, and I met some boy, kind of hippie type person, who is into spiritual things in some way. And he told me, we were talking about, you know, Bhagavad Gita, yoga, and so on like that. And he was expressing very great enthusiasm. And I was talking a little bit about the practice of Krishna consciousness. You know, yes, Bhagavad Gita is teaching yoga, and there's a way to follow it, and that's we're following. It's called sadhana bhakti. And he said, oh yeah, he said, yeah, you see, I just was working on a banana boat coming from South America to Florida. And that was also, yeah, that was really great sadhana. Really great sadhana. So, so anything, you know, can be sadhana for them. Working on a banana boat or whatever, you know. It's just all, it's all like in the mind, you know, how you view it. So, it really doesn't mean anything. You know. If they say there's a stage when you follow sadhana. Well, no, you can't carry it over. We see that there's a material body and there's a spiritualized body. You know, when a devotee becomes pure in this body, then Prabhupada says his physical body becomes Krishnized, like the example of the iron in the fire. And then there's the spiritual body, which when one becomes fully Krishna conscious, develops his full rasa with Krishna, then the soul manifests the spiritual body, which is eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. But their idea pertains only to the physical body. So you really can't compare it. So now let's go on to the owl. I don't think this is going to take so long. The word owl comes from a Persian word, atul. Because many Indian words have Persian mixed into them, because the Mughals, the Muslims came from Persia and conquered. So owl is a Bengali word which is derived from atul. Atul means afflicted. Just like when you're very hungry, you're afflicted by hunger. It is very prominent in the mind. It affects your behavior. Or when one is very sad, something has made a person very unhappy. So it affects his behavior, becomes afflicted by sadness, crying, no enthusiasm for anything. As soon as you see the person, you know exactly how he's feeling, because it's all over his face. You see? So atul means afflicted. It also has, it especially means afflicted, actually afflicted by lust. As when some lovers are separated. And in Persian poetry, there are many, many poems. This Omar Khayyam, he wrote many poems like this, thinking of his lover who's far away. And what one line from his poem was, a loaf of bread, a jug of wine, and you. So he's, you know. So this kind of affliction is really what it's meant. So, then their particular idea is that by agitating mundane lust to a very, very high degree, where one becomes atul, or owl, completely afflicted by it, then that is the, you know, Radha Krishna Prema Bhava. So they concentrate particularly on this. This is their main effort in life. And again, this word owl is found in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, but the owl there is used in the transcendental sense. It says that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, different verses will say that Lord Chaitanya was aula. He was afflicted by love of Godhead. But this aula apasampradaya have taken that word and applied the totally materialistic meaning. This is interesting to point out, and you'll see this again and again throughout these upper sampradaya. They've taken something from the scriptures, but taken it out of these context, out of the explanation of the acharyas. In other words, you can say, in one sense, the word aula, because it comes from the Persian language, so in that context, it has this material conception or material meaning to it, of being afflicted in the ordinary emotional way. And so because Krishnadas Kaviraj, he has used that word, then they have interpreted, well, that this is what he must mean. But you know, when you convey Krishna consciousness, you have to use the language at hand. You see, just like nowadays, it would be very nice if we could go out and preach Krishna consciousness in pure Sanskrit. And then we would get everything very exact, wouldn't we? We could explain the philosophy very, very exactly, no mistake, but nobody speaks Sanskrit. We also don't speak Sanskrit. So we have to use our own language. And our own language is, you know, like Prabhupada, he once said, German is for speaking to dogs, English is for speaking to horses, and French is for speaking to women. So this is like the mentality, you know, behind these languages. So we're preaching Krishna consciousness, but we have to use these languages. So, of course, one should preach so nicely that there won't be this confusion. If one is actually inspired by Krishna consciousness and is careful to present the philosophy nicely, then there won't be this confusion. But for someone foolish, you see, totally in material consciousness, then, you know, we say love of Godhead. Now, where else do you hear this word love? What else does it refer to? I mean, it only refers to one thing, and that's sex. Everywhere else, if you see this word love, it means sex. Only the Hare Krishnas, when we say love, we differentiate in our language, our use of language, between love and lust. The Karmis, actually, they think lust is a, you know, funny word. They don't use it so much. They like the word love because it glorifies the lust. You see, it makes the lust sound very nice. And if you just say lust, then it, you know, might remind one of a dog, you know, dogs and cats and things like that. They don't want to think like that. No, make it love. So then, you know, you look at the newsstand and you see all these magazines, you know, True Love and this and that. People read these romance novels, love, love. But it's all sex. So you can just imagine someone who's a complete fool. He may stumble in somewhere and hear some devotee speaking about love of Krishna. And then he thinks of it, you know, as being lust for Krishna, or Krishna's love for Srimati Radharani. And he thinks of it in that way, as lust, taking that word, the mundane meaning. So this is what has happened with this owl term. So they make that their whole program, to agitate lusty desire and become totally afflicted. Here it's explained. A group of people who are simply guided by an uncontrolled mind, emotions, and speculations simply could not grasp the purport of this particular word. These men were ignorant and engrossed in sense gratification. And so they created a cult and called themselves Aulas. As a further proof of their foolishness and audacity, they claimed that Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda Prabhu, and the Goswamis were also all Aulas. They engage... Here's a point. The men in this cult call themselves Purusha, or the male factor and enjoyer. They surround themselves with many women who are known as Prakriti, or the female principle. Now, Mataji asked about sadhana. So here. They engage in illicit activities with these women and call this sadhana. Although these men may have a wife, they have no compunction. That means they have no... There's no hesitation on their part to enjoy with other women or even other men's wives. Nor do they restrict their own wives from maintaining illicit relationships with other aulas who they see as purushas, you see. So, therefore, in this regard, they are free from any kind of enviousness in this particular regard, any kind of... There's no problem, you see. Your wife runs off with another aula. So that's her sadhana. And you in the meantime, can run off with the wife of that aula. And that's your sadhana. So it's all very nice. I may make just a little footnote to this, that in certain... places at certain times in our ISKCON movement, such things have also been seen. End of footnote. So summing up the philosophy. There is this Mayavadi point that the owls believe in many Purushas, or enjoyers. They'll accept Krishna as Purusha, but they're any male, any person in a man's body who develops this aula consciousness, which they say is the pure consciousness, then he also becomes Purusha. They believe that the body is the real self, and thus that's how they determined who is Purusha and who is Prakriti, just by looking at the body. The Vaishnavas never consider themselves to be on the platform of the Supreme Lord, or the controller, or the enjoyer, or the perfected being, but the Aulas try to usurp this position of the Supreme Lord Krishna, and this is totally against all scriptural Vaishnava conclusions. This is a good point. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, appeared as the most munificent incarnation of Godhead, yet in his pastimes there is absolutely no instance of his ever having any contact with other women other than his wife, illicitly. Our previous acharyas, topmost among them, Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, never subscribed to such unbonafide and illicit relationship with women. The perfect example of this line of thought is found in the story of Junior Haridas, whom Lord Chaitanya rejected. Therefore, if anyone tries to claim that Lord Chaitanya or the eternal associates are the initiators of such an unbonafide line as this aula, they are committing a very great and serious offense against the Lord himself and the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas. The pure message of Lord Chaitanya has preached the highest religion. What to speak of mundane lust, it does not even entertain the slightest desire for fruitive activities, speculative knowledge, or yogic perfections, or even liberation. Therefore, in Mahaprabhu's pure line of teaching, can never condone the perverted philosophy of the aulas. Okay. Any question about the aulas? The aulas, this group is not so much seen anymore. I was telling this yesterday because of the enforcing of moral codes in society. Once these upa sampradayas in the past, they were very much rampant, this kind that were engaging in very nasty practices. But they became so outrageous that public morality went against them. And so they don't dare do these things in, at least openly anymore. So one does not see. Of course, it's still around, but one does not see it so obviously. So this particular aula group is not very prominent anymore. Next, Sakhi Beki. So Sakhi, the principal gopis of Lord Krishna, are Sakhis, called Sakhi. Beki comes from Beka, and Beka is just a corrupt or slang form of the Sanskrit word Vesha. So Vesha means dress. So Sakhi Beki is a person who dresses like a gopi. So they artificially assume the disguise of the cowherd girlfriends, the cowherd damsels of Vrindavan, in their material male or female bodies. See, in this way they practice equal rights, because both men and women can be Sakhi Bekis. Everyone can wear a sari. That's their outfit, you see. Sakhi Bekis, they all wear saris. And they paint the bottom of their feet red and all these other things. The Sakhi Beki community is very much impelled by illusion. They think this decaying material body is the gopi, the confidential associate of Lord Krishna. They take this body to be that. And they try to decorate it with very nice sari and offer it to Krishna. So, if Krishna also had another's, he also was had such material body, then such an offering of a bag of bone and blood and flesh would be pleasing to him. But because Krishna is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss, and so is Srimati Radharani and all the other gopis, and also their decorations, their saris and everything else is also Satchitananda. So it simply is a big illusion to think that which is delightful to the dogs and the vultures will be pleasing to Krishna. They dress up, this is talking about the men, and once one will see this group, I've seen them in Vrindavan, they're still around today, they dress themselves up in these gopi outfits and they call them each other Lalita, Vishaka, Champalata. You see, they give each other gopi names and they go running around with pots of milk on their head, singing gopi songs. They shave twice a day. They use nose rings. They keep their hair in the female style. That means with a braid, in the real long with a braid. And they act like women also. Talk in high voices. And you see such people in the West too, don't you? So now, the origin of this group, where did it start? This is very interesting. On one occasion, it's described in Chaitanya Bhagavat, and I think maybe also in Chaitanya Charitamrita. On one occasion, Sri Gadadhar Pandit, Panchatattva Gadadhar, He, because he is actually the incarnation of Radharani. So one time he became overwhelmed with that ecstasy, remembering his identity as Srimati Radharani. So he put a pot on his head, and he went into the... It was a pitcher of Ganges water. And he went walking around in the trance of a gopi, and he was calling out, "Does anyone want to buy my yogurt?" He was like gopis do, calling to sell the yogurt. And this was observed by Lord Nityananda. So, and this is written in the scriptures, this description. So just like the aulas, they took that word aula. So the Saki Bakis have taken this and made this the all in all. This is everything. This is what Krishna consciousness means. You put a pot on your head and dress up like a lady and go around and talking in a high voice. So here's some points. The rituals of the Saki Bakis are wholly unknown to the Guru Parampara coming in, down in the line of Srila Rupa Goswami. To declare that the material body, which is made of, this is a very nice expression, to declare that the material body, which is made of gases, enzymes, and cough, and that was just confirmed by someone, and which is destined to feed dogs and jackals, to declare such body as being transcendental is completely foolish. So anything that's done on that basis, any practice that's performed on that basis, cannot be bona fide spiritual practice, is not acceptable. The artificial finery of the gross body, meaning however you dress it, whether you put it in a sari or whatever, that never pleases the eyes of Krishna. If this were true, then he would have been attracted to beautiful prostitutes and all other kinds of materialists. But actually, Lord Krishna is only attracted by pure devotion. The doctrine of the Saki Bakis is merely another variety of the Mayavadi philosophy. They might argue that they do not call themselves Sakis, but simply meditate upon some real Saki. In other words, they are meditating upon Radharani or Lalita or Vishakha. And by meditating like that, they kind of enter into an ecstasy, which impels them to dress up like that Saki, like that gopi. But they're not really thinking that they themselves in that body are that gopi. But still the question remains, can one make any spiritual advancement by such materialistic mental speculation? If speculation was sufficient in order to become Krishna conscious and go back to Godhead, then there wouldn't be no problem for anyone to become a pure devotee. But unfortunately, this is cheating, and it is not acceptable. Another good point, this whole Saki Beki doctrine, the conclusion of it is that Krishna is to be enjoyed by us in this material body. It is actually a form of sense gratification. The Saki Bakis the conclusion is the Saki Bakis, they totally contradict the line of the authority of the Guru Parampara, so they are to be rejected. So Saki Beki is actually the counterpoint of aula. The aulas are thinking themselves as Purushas, and the Saki Bakis are thinking, the aulas think themselves as Krishna in his lila of enjoying with the gopis, and the Saki Bakis are thinking of themselves as those gopis. Is there any question on that? Yes?
When they say that, we sometimes explain why are we not less desiring, but we to try Krishna.
Oh, yeah?
I have another explanation.
Well. Sounds like something from the Saki Beki side. I think that's an interesting point you've brought up. Yesterday we're talking about how we should understand these Appa Sampradayas and see how such conceptions may creep into our own community. And I think that that's an example. I mean, we... Huh? What did
I
say?
I heard this a long time ago. The expression was Vaikuntha Yajna.
Vaikuntha Yajna?
Yeah. Oh. So very early, actually, they said that the lady should make herself up nicely for the Krishna.
Well,
I don't know where...
It can be understood, the men dress themselves up in dhotis and put on tilak also for the pleasure of Krishna. In the same way, the Matajis are putting on sari because that's the proper dress for human being and female body in civilized society. But so in that sense, it pleases Krishna because one is following the... This is all connected with the, you know, just standard of human life, proper standard of human life. It's part of Varnashram. So one pleases Krishna by partaking in Varnashram. But if that's interpreted, you know, if you take that and just try to propel it up to the Gopi Bhava level of pleasing Krishna, that just by putting on a sari, you become Krishna's girlfriend, then this is the Saki Beki. I mean, I've heard also, not so much, I mean, the sari is one thing, but I've also heard some, the excuse given for some Matajis of wearing makeup and earrings and things like that. It's for Krishna. So I think there we see this influence. How can it be for Krishna? How will Krishna become happy if you wear makeup? So this is definitely the Saki Beki influence. Mm-hmm.
There was one Mataji asking her Krishna this question about painting and face.
So if the husband is not an aula, it's wonderful. As long as he's not an aula. Well, the idea of that, there is a reason for that. And it also simply has to do with Varnashram. That husbands... mind should, I mean, we're taking that the husband has some, I mean, otherwise, why is he married? He must have some attraction to the ladies. So then the reason for marriage is to fix that attraction upon in lawful, according to Shastra way, upon his wife. So then the wife should understand that and not be a yogini, you know, not shave her head and cover herself with ashes and say she has nothing to do with the material world. And it's all Maya. Because if she does like that, then he won't be satisfied with her. You know, maybe she may be a very great, you know, renunciate and all of that, but he and very pure and spiritual, but he won't have any satisfaction from her. And then his mind will go in the direction of other women. And that the whole reason for marriage is to stop that from happening. So therefore there's some allowance like that, that a woman can, or should actually, keep herself at least clean and, you know, nicely dressed. I don't know about the makeup, I won't comment on that. But at least clean and nicely, you know, nicely appearing to satisfy the mind of the husband, to keep the relationship strong.
You mentioned that these different kinds of sampradayas, they are kind of Mayavad, influenced by Mayavad philosophy, but as far as I understood by your explanation, it seems like there's no understanding of Brahman like that, like we normally understand there is Brahman and
no, it's, yeah, but it's not, the Mayavadi philosophy is just the idea of oneness, you know, of there being no distinction between the spiritual realm and the material realm. That's the idea of Mayavadi. You see, even the Mayavadis, you see, there are Brahmavadis, what are called Brahma, they're impersonalists, but they make the distinction between this material existence and the Brahman. Or Brahma Jyoti. You see? So they meditate on that Brahma Jyoti to go to the Brahma Jyoti. But that's different. And they have a philosophy. Their philosophy is actually called, it's a form of Beda Beda philosophy. But it's impersonal Beda Beda. Beda means one and different. That, yes, this material existence emanates from Brahman. But it is not one with Brahman. You see, isn't it? It comes from, so there's a relation, in that sense, oneness. But there's also difference. So therefore, the Brahmavadis have a, you know, clear conception. We want to go from here to there. But the Mayavadis, they say it's all one. They're Advaitist. They're distinct from the Dvaitists who say there is a clear duality. They're distinct from the Dvaita Advaita or Beda Beda who say there's difference but there's relationship of oneness too. They say there is only oneness. It's the same. The material manifestation is Brahman. And the Brahma Jyoti is the material manifestation. And that's the whole problem with their philosophy because it cannot be explained how that's true. You see? That's been the whole controversy. Other philosophers arguing against the Mayavadi. So, well, how is this to be realized? That right now this is the liberated state, actually. That's what they say. We are all actually liberated right now. Nothing else has to change. You just have to realize it. So, those who are strict followers of Shankaracharya, then you see they argue that in order to realize this impersonal Brahman, then you have to follow this codified life of sannyas that Shankaracharya taught, which is very strict. But they themselves, they call this kind of life, and they give it a word, vyavaharika, which means convenient illusion. It's illusion, but it's convenient for realizing the absolute truth. But it is still Maya. And then of course there's the ordinary people who don't follow this lifestyle. So they're, you know, they just say they're more in Maya. But actually everybody is in Maya. You see? So and that the supreme truth, then you cannot explain it. It has no form like that. So, now the flaw in that is if you say that everything is Maya, everything is illusion, then what is the absolute criterion which says that this so-called Vyavaharika form of illusion is the only way to realize Brahman? Since everything is equally illusion or equally Brahman at all time. So, why can't I realize Brahman by eating a hamburger? I mean, you know, why not? If the philosophy is it's all one, then if I eat a hamburger and I'm meditating that this is Brahman, then I should be able to realize it, isn't it? I mean, why do I have to take sannyas? Why do I have to sit down and chant Om? Why? What's so special about Om? It's also Maya. I could chant, I want to hold your hand, you know. Or anything.